Wayfair's big sale is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, October 5th through October 7th, save up to 80% off on everything home. With low prices on top furniture and decor, now's the time to invest in new seating or dining set. Up your holiday decorating game for way less. Refresh your cookware and baking supplies. Restock your linen closet. And maybe even treat yourself? Actually, definitely treat yourself. At up to 80% off, this is the sale to go all out. Oh, and did we mention everything ships free all Way Day long? Yeah, everything, even a sectional. Plus, surprise flash deals launch every 24 hours on some of Wayfair's top products. So check back each day to score big on something you never saw coming. Who knows what amazing finds you'll bring home. Don't miss Wayfair's big sale. Way Day only lasts 3 days and won't be back soon. Save up to 80% off all things home now through October 7th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Hey, it's JD here, and we wanted to take a moment to thank you for tuning in to Discovering Downey. That said, it's time to take this relationship to the next level. Live, baby, live. Friday, July 19th, Long Slice Brewery presents a celebration of Gord Downey. Tickets are now on sale at discoveringdowney.com. Come for the finale of Discovering Downey with special guest Patrick Downey and stay for the Hip Tribute Act, The Almost Hip, and our fantastic silent auction. All proceeds from this project will go to the Gord Downey Fund for Brain Cancer Research. So come out to the show, because seeing is believing, and you won't believe what we've got in store for you until you see it yourself. Get your tickets today.
Minneapolis Hotel Room. Here I sit, cool as a garage, writing by lightning. I don't mean lightning as a metaphor for inspiration, I mean lighting. Intermittent lightning. By lightning really turning it on. A lightning-powered hotel room. It's the most lightning I've ever seen in one room.
Welcome, music lovers. Long Slice Brewery presents Discovering Downey.
Hey, it's JD here, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by my pals Craig, Justin, and Kirk from Chino. While our love for the hip unites us, it's Gord's solo ventures that remain uncharted for our trio. Hence, I've gathered this team of enthusiasts to delve into the musical repertoire of the enigmatic frontman of the Tragically Hip, the late Gord Downey. Come along with us on this exploration as we navigate through his albums one by one in chronological order, embarking on our quest of discovering Downey. This is the second of two parts of our gang covering Gord's first solo record, Coke Machine Glow. If you listen to part one, we discussed the album as a whole and then got into a song-by-song breakdown. On this episode, we'll pick up where we left off with a song that has to be about cottage country, doesn't it? Well, in my head it is. Craig, why don't you kick things off with your thoughts on Black Flies?
Right away, what hit me was the laminar flow line, because I was at that show, and I'm not sure if this was something that he did all through the roadside attraction, the first tour that I saw, but the Vancouver show or the Seabird Island show, 1993, I believe, maybe 94, 93. He goes off on this rant about laminar flow, and you can actually find it online too. And he's talking about, you know, it's the flow of liquid, and he's sort of talking about the crowd and the movement of the crowd. And this was my first hip show. We're talking, I'm not sure how many thousands of people there, 20,000, this wave of people. And this is like the early hip fans, right? This is
roadside,
right? Partying crowd. Yep. And it was this, it was in the middle of nowhere.
That's your first hip show?
Huge.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Huge. Yeah. Just in the middle of a forest, really. And, you know, just like you see on the videos with like Canadian flags and drunk, you know, jock types. And I was quite young. I think I was 18 at the time and not really knowing how to take Gord. Like I loved the Hip at the time. Like I think Fully Completely had either just come out or was about to. Loved that album. Loved, you know, the band since Up to Here. And at one point, and you can actually see it in this video, he starts getting angry with someone in the crowd saying, "Don't look at them, look at me." Like, you know, referencing, you know, the other band members. And he was obviously joking, but at the time I had no clue. He just looked, I was like, this guy really is starved for attention, because not only does he sing all the songs and he's talking in between all the songs, he's talking over top of the guitar solos. And at first I didn't know how to take that. I thought it was really jarring for me being a musician. And I was kind of thinking, what are the other bandmates think of this? Like of course, over the years you come to appreciate that and know it's just a part of the act, right? But yeah, that don't look at them, look at me. Just, you have to find the clip. It's so good. It's called Laminar Flow. Find it on YouTube. It's so funny. My friend I went to the show with, who I still am in contact with, he would always talk about the Laminar Flow, and I didn't remember it really. And then he a few years ago pointed out the video to me, and I'm like, oh yeah, I do remember that trim. I you know, Gord had the big beard at the time. He had the almost like pajamas on, yeah. And when the pajama top came off, he had the Save the Human shirt on. Yeah. Which I actually saw in one of the videos for this album. So he brought the shirt back out for Coke Machine Glow.
And that the timing of that wouldn't have been too far removed from the Killer Whale.
Probably not. Yeah, I don't remember him doing that. But again, I was young and it was craziness. It was a fun time.
See the bull moose checking out another Drac. Like, sorry, that was just the highlight I made from a lyrical standpoint. And then, you know, from a musical standpoint, and I think I also read about this, it's pretty prevalent where they're strumming the piano strings and they brought a mic in and recorded it, and just love that. Like, what's that? And, they decide to bring in the mic and record the track. So on to Lofty Pines.
All right, let's go to Lofty Pines, where Paul Langlois shows up and makes an appearance, one of two appearances on this record, to provide his sublime backing vocals. God damn, is this guy good.
It's too hot to sleep. Let's gather round the fan. We can't do nothing about the heat. Let's just do what we can. Everything will be just fine. Just dream of the lofty pines. Well, I dreamed of the lofty pines, at least what I thought they were, standing in the forest after nighttime, swaying so cool and sure had never been so wrong. Sure, like the title of the perfect song. Now for the spectacular part. Just then a pack of matches fell, a logo of a tree in a heart. They're from the Lofty Pines Motel. All the while our dreams were our own. All the while that didn't mean all alone.
I gave the editor my pitch. A series on a culture well about the Arrow catalog and lives. I call it Why We Fight, I said. If only we had nothing to we'll just have to take that chance. We've got world enough and time. Dreaming of the lofty
I think it was a week or so ago, I took a trip up north, I think you guys know about, and I was driving back and it was raining, and which we don't get a lot of rain. We don't get a lot of anything in California other than the sun. So, you know, when it's raining out, it's a big deal.
Yeah. But. Yeah.
I remember listening as I was driving, and buddy I was with was, you know, was, I think he was taking a nap or working on something. And I remember going, the mood, you know, my mood was, okay, I got a long drive, and there was kind of like a monotony that had been coming from song after song after song, because it is typically slower than that hip stuff that I was used to. And I know that they made a conscious effort, or at least Gord made a conscious effort to keep the hip away from this, right? Like I read as well, like they didn't want to record anywhere that the hip had recorded. They didn't want to use any of the gear. But then Paul, who is his right, his longest friend or buddy, he knew
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he comes in and is on, he's on another tune as well, I believe, on this album. But you hear that, and for me driving, I got that, like, okay, thank you. Thank you for giving me a little just reconnection. I know this is Gord, but I also know that Gord is that kind of heartbeat and pulse and provides the lyrics to. And I liked having that friend along, me personally. And I couldn't, I couldn't get the, you know, Twin Peaks type lofty pine, connection correlation. Going there, not that I was, you know, fully into the Twin Peaks world or whatnot, but yeah. So that's what I had for some of my notes.
The lines that are in French, I was hoping for something revealing, and it's literally just, I was born for the heat. We can't do anything about the heat.
I was hoping one of you guys would research that. I was too lazy. Hey, my only note for this song, yeah, if you could see my notebooks, just better call Paul, because he's he just is so effortless. I just picture Gord being in the studio like, I can't quite get the sound I'm going for here, and calls up Paul, and he just comes in and, you know, smoke hanging out of his mouth. He just rips off one take, and that's how it's just so effortless. You can just tell by the, you know, he's just sang with Gord for so long, sang with Gord for so long that he just knows what to do. I guarantee it was one take and he was done.
Yeah. Again, he gave me that, the combination is something that definitely fills you up. when I was doing the research as well on the French part, the first thing that came up was, I don't want to say a province in Quebec, but it was like a lake chalet. So that's where I was going at first, and then obviously did a little deeper and found out, nah, not quite, but thought we were referencing something there at one point.
Well, I mean, that could be. There's a lot of lofty pines in Quebec and a lot of lakes, so you never know.
Well, the Lofty Pine Hotel was in cottage country in Ontario until I don't even know when, like not that, like pretty recently. So to me, I hear this song and it's like one of those, it sounds sticky. It sounds muggy. It's like one of those August nights in the city, where, you know, it's extra hot because air conditioners are spitting out hot heat. Like the city's just got this almost dense air that you're walking through. The cool side of your pillow is sweating, you know, that's the kind of heat. And they're just daydreaming about getting up to the cottage, just getting the fuck out of Dodge and going to the cottage, dreaming of those lofty pines. I don't know. That's sort of what I get from it.
So just a real quick note, building on what you just said about it's so freaking hot and the spectacular part in the lyrics, and there's a matchbook or whatever that falls, like we needed something hotter, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and here's matches, you know.
I didn't get that, but yeah, totally. Yeah.
What do you believe he's referring to in the, I give the editor my pitch, a series on the cultural wealth, about the era of catalogs and lists?
I just think he's good at creating protagonists. I think it's like a protagonist of this song. I guess I'm very literal.
Yeah.
Don't make me say Hitler again.
No, I don't. I think this is,
I don't know.
More literal, you know, but he's proven to not do that so often that it seems like not likely, but that's how, like, he's answering a question that we haven't asked, you know. Let's go to the next track, which is Boy Brews by Butterfly Chase.
I really didn't have anything to say about the song for a while, and then I listened to it actually just today, and it kind of came to me that this is somewhere between consciousness and unconsciousness, or life and death, somewhere in the middle. You know, he references someone was crying. As I lay in the dirt, I could hear their hearts breaking, but I wasn't even hurt. So that's kind of like, I'm slipping away and I don't feel anything, sort of thing. That's just how I interpreted the line.
I came across something just by chance, glancing through the CD booklet last night. And there's a little article. It says, Bruised by a Butterfly Chase. And it looks like it's actually photocopied from a newspaper. It says, 4-year-old Andrew Harrett holds his Winnie the Pooh blanket at a hospital in Halifax. The Kentville boy survived a 20-meter fall from a cliff at Blomidon Provincial Park while chasing butterflies during a family outing. So wow. It could be very literally about a boy.
Down, falling, down.
It's like it made so much sense when I read that. So
yeah,
there's no an kidding. Extra song, and I didn't get to listen to it yet. But is it this? It's titled Down.
Yeah, it's the same lyrics. Yeah,
yeah, and I guess that makes sense. The grass felt so good, and they're talking about he didn't have shoes, so that makes sense that it's a 4-year-old. The day was so blue, I must have tripped. I don't know. Do I remember falling away? Nothing that I hold on to and not being afraid. So that's when you're that young, you probably don't have much memory of it as an adult. And especially, I would assume there's some trauma there.
Yeah. And Justin, though, I mean, just your first explanation, that in between, before we heard the story, like, you took me there. And yeah. I think musically it does as well. Like, my notes are the guitar, like, you know, guitar is prevalent in some of these other songs, but you don't hear guitar lines and guitar melodies as much. And there's some very clear guitar work going on here, both acoustic and electric, which you also don't really get a lot of in these songs, or you know.
The song is almost poppy.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Super radio absolutely. Friendly. And I thought it could be a hip song.
Wow. Yeah, really. Yeah, you know, those... And I guess obviously that could be true to anything, but change up some of the instrumentation, change up some of the tempo, and you're definitely in hip territory. Definitely in hip territory.
Let's go to Mystery, a sonic soundscape.
Yeah, and it really is. It starts off in that sonic soundscape world and then goes to the spoken word. Sorry, a bit of humor. One of my favorite flicks is So I Married an Axe Murderer, and turn off the Bay City Rollers, the soccer game is on. somewhere there's a soccer game. And being in the background with that, I at a loss in the sense of that journey that Gord's going through and doing some research and finding, you know, with the book of poetry that came out, that he was, you know, it was not received from the poetry world, as it were.
Did not know that.
And yeah, it was, yeah, it was not received from it's like, oh, this is just, you know, and they made the joke of, oh yeah, what are you going to do? Give Bob Dylan a Pulitzer it's that being someone that's written songs before and I can't say that I've written poetry, but it's very much frowned upon to have, you know, they said, you know, Jim Morrison killed that. So why is anybody else doing it? And so then the counter argument goes, well, yeah, it sells well because of who Gord is and what he does and how he moves people. And then what came afterwards was, yeah, in the libraries and in the bookstores, there was a lot more people in the poetry section than had ever been there before. So, you know, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to be completely inclusive or exclusive, and does the inclusivity then start damaging the art? I'm of the belief and the ilk that you need people to dive into both lyrics, dive into poetry, dive into the spoken word side. So yeah, sorry, I digress.
And this is just coming off the song Poets on Phantom Power, which in live shows, he's sort of, don't tell me what the poets are doing. Like, I don't want to know. Like, I don't care about the poets. Or it could be perceived that way, whether he meant that or not.
Yeah. I know from a musical standpoint, this song gave me vibes of the Rain song by Led Zeppelin. And I know it sounds nothing like it, but if you listen, and it took me a while to figure out what it was, but if you listen to the bass notes, he's playing really high in the register. And it just gives that cascading feel of the Rain song. And and near the end too, he's playing up the neck on the bass, and it's just some really nice playing.
Yeah, I have avant-garde. I would imagine that the Dinner is Ruined gang had a heavy influence on this.
Yeah, and this is the other Adam Egoyan track as well. So that guitar you hear, the little classical guitar, that's Egoyan.
Ah.
Cool.
Sorry. Help me understand, not being as familiar outside of in the research. Does he hold a special place in a Canadian heart?
Adam Egoyan, he was a filmmaker. I can't say I'm an expert on him, but he had a movie called The Sweet Hereafter, which was very well received. I believe it won awards. And actually, I believe, didn't Sarah Harmer sing, I think, a version of Courage on the soundtrack?
Sarah Polley,
right, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to do a little more research and check some of that out. Justin, were you familiar at all?
Only from reading the Neverending Present book had I heard the name, no.
Anything else on Mystery?
Only that the Phantom Power outtake version is so drastically different and also equally amazing. It is so...
Yes.
The one on Phantom Power is so dark and so moody, and I have here a note that it's almost like a more depressing version of Landslide by Fleetwood Mac. It's just haunting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I mean, they're wildly different, but so funny they share the same DNA, ultimately.
I think what's funny is that the version that's on the Phantom Power re-release would have been recorded 2 years before this. So
like,
this is
like a reimagining.
This is part
two. It makes you wonder, is it just that he really loved the words and he, you know, the track got cut for whatever reason, just didn't fit in maybe with the album, and it was something he really wanted to put out there, and you know. Yeah, I'm glad he did. I love both versions.
Okay, next up, we get a song in 3/4. It's got a country-ish little tinge to it. And that's Elaborate.
Said you had a problem. He didn't elaborate. He was on a streetcar. Talking on his cell phone. He couldn't elaborate. He said the bad news come down. Triple screening or the ultrasound. Didn't look so great. Said he saw you with your guitar and you were low. He didn't just call him, you know, 'cause I can't really, you know. The
I imagine cowboys, after having driven cattle across the plains, just sitting around a fire drinking a beer, you know, and somebody's got a guitar, and then somebody whips out a mandolin 3 minutes into the song, you know, it's, but it's about death. It's about somebody's sick, somebody's dying, has cancer. And in the poem version in the book, it's the title also has a parenthetical Toronto number two, which Music at Work has the song Toronto number four, which is about Gord's grandmother dying. So there's a common thread there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is very much a end of the day. Things are happening and they may not.
Yeah. I have a tough time hearing this, knowing what we know about what happened to Gord. Like, I can't help but hear it through that filter. And it makes it difficult to listen to for me.
Yeah, I had the same thing, JD. It felt to me like a song that was meant to have a little bit of, I don't want to say humor, but a bit of lightheartedness to it in a way. But then knowing what we know, what happened with Gord, it definitely changes the way you hear it.
Interestingly, my head went to Now for Plan A instead of Gord's own diagnosis.
And also... I'm not sure if you guys heard this at all, but again, I'm less of a lyric guy, more of a music guy. The mandolin solo comes in, a little mandolin melody, and it reminds me so much of Neil Diamond's Play Me. And if you listen to it, you'll know what I mean. It's so funny. It doesn't quite go in the same place, but it's very close. Yeah, great tune. And at the end, they're kind of going on for a while, and then Gord kind of clears his throat, like as if to say, "Yeah, come on, wrap it up, boys."
I have that in my notes.
So JD, if we're going on too long, just
me too.
Clear your throat, and we'll know it's time to wrap up.
No, not at all.
One thing that I picked up on, which is a timestamp on this album, is Gord mentions cell phone, and a lot of bands in the late '90s, early 2000s, for just like a 3 or 4 year period, mentioned cell phones. Because that's when they came out. Like, we didn't have cell phones before 98, 99. And if we did, they were in a bag that weighed, you know, 30 pounds. So I thought it was interesting that cell phone was topical for their 2000.
It's a country song. You said it. It's a country tune. That's my first note, is country tune. And then you hear the, you know, the guitar tremolo, just that ringing, that just doing single notes, and it's just ringing. And then the mandolin. But you're talking about modern topics on a cowboy song, on a country tune.
There's also a great live version of this I found. It's the black and white. It's like a full concert that someone's put on YouTube. There's this pretty epic Gord rant on it, and he's talking about stem cell research and the Pope, and it's worth a watch for sure. And he dedicates the song to Dave Bedini, which I found interesting, from Rio Statics.
Oh.
He's still alive, so I don't know why he just did. He just says, you know, this song's for Dave.
I wonder if he went through a battle with a family member.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe a had mutual illness. Acquaintance or, yeah, who knows?
The beauty of where we're being taken on this particular album is pretty incredible. Yeah, and then you go into frigging a polka, right, with your possessed.
Yeah.
I did not expect that coming. I'm just like, you're hearing all these songs that are very kind of melancholy.
Yeah.
You know, outside of Canada Geese that has a little bit of drive to it.
Yeah.
You're and possessed, now there's a tuba. Man. Now for tuba.
If you guys know... Have you guys seen Spinal Tap, I'm guessing?
Oh, of course.
Okay, yes. So my mind went right to,
the
Nigel and David St. Hubbins, their first song, the doon doo doon doon doo, walking down the railroad track, doon 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 doo doo, wait for my bay to bring me back. that's where my mind went. But funnily enough, my daughter picked this song out. We were in the car listening to the CD, and she wanted to pick a song, so she went through the track listing. And she picked You're Possessed because her favorite hip song is You're Not the Ocean. This is my 11-year-old daughter. And so she loved the spelling of year. And she put this song on, and her reading of it, like I told her what I was thinking. And she said, this sounds to me like Emmett Otter. And I'm not sure if this is a reference. I can see Kirk knows what I'm talking about. So here's a quick story.
Oh my gosh.
When I was...
we can just be finished right now.
I grew up in a small town called Peachland in the Okanagan in BC. Small town. We had maybe, I don't know, a couple thousand people when I lived there. And we had two channels. We had channel 4 CBC and channel 9 CTV. And there was no cable company in town. But on the outskirts of town was a large satellite dish, like a huge satellite dish that someone put there. And so the whole town got free HBO for years, like pirated, stolen HBO. I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 years. And
let's go.
Every you know, 3 months, you'd come home, turn on HBO, and it'd be scrambled. And so it would be all down for a couple of days until they repositioned the satellite. And so every Christmas time, this is early 80s, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas would come on HBO. And to me, I just thought this was a thing that everyone knew. And as I got older and I found a DVD copy in a, bargain bin at Zeller's or something, I started talking about this show to people, and no one, except for the people I know from Peachland, know this show. And it's a Jim Henson production.
Well, Craig,
it's about 1977. It's a cult classic. It's just Paul Williams. Yeah.
Yeah,
and to me, that's what my daughter said. And I was like, that's it. This is a jug band, with a tuba instead of a jug.
T-shirts. I have stickers. I am on the verge of learning River Bottom Nightmare Band to cover with our band. Christmas does not happen in the Lane household.
I'm the same way.
Emmett Otter's plays. We have obviously the DVD copy, and in fact, it's a running joke. Sorry, JD and Justin, if you haven't seen it, but like anything that's $50, Craig, $50, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So my whole family, anything that's $50, the first response is $50.
Money. Anytime we have mashed potatoes. I love mashed potatoes.
Oh, God. Hey, yeah, man. How are you doing? Catch anything good today? You're really biting. Sorry, guys. So JD and Justin, if you haven't seen Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, your life will begin to exist afterwards.
So let's change the focus for episode two.
Please.
The music is so good. And it's this Christmas story. Doesn't once mention, religion, Jesus. It doesn't once mention Santa. And it's the best Christmas show you'll ever see. It's so sweet.
Huh.
The music. It's amazing. It tears me up every time.
And I love that connection that your daughter has to the song, Craig. I mean, I really did start welling up. Not only finding someone that loves Emmett Otter, but that she made that connection.
Yeah,
that's really fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, and
fantastic.
And of course, Paul's back singing the backups here. And I have to ask, have you guys been to Boston? They mentioned Lansdowne Street, Fenway Park. I'm guessing Lansdowne is.
So that's where Fenway Park is, and that's my only note on this song. Just after that, he says, "No one's going to hurt me like you did." Well, he's talking about the Red Sox. He's totally talking about Bill Buckner missing the catch or the grounder in 1986 to throw it away.
Maybe, or I watched a live version of this as well. And he tells a story, and I don't remember all the details, but he tells a story about a fight with his brother, Patrick. So yeah, I'm not sure if it could be a brotherly story.
Well, and Patrick was the sound guy
for
the Garden where the Bruins play and the Celtics play. And of course the Harry Sinden, the Bruins coach, was the godfather. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. He wore the sweater in Courage in the video for Courage.
Yeah, this is a great tune. Yeah. I mean, just in all of it, you've got the spoken word stuff, you've got some of the melancholy stuff, and then boom, you get this boom, doom, boom, doom, and the solos.
We're
at a pool party in 1946.
Yeah. And also quick Canadian tie-in. JD, the other Canadian classic with a tuba. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't off the top of my
head. We talked about this. Spirit of the West and If Venice Is Sinking.
Oh my God.
Epic tuba part. Yeah. Yeah. So the only two songs I can think of featuring a tuba. I'm sure there are others, but.
Last I checked, there weren't that many bands featuring a tuba.
Not enough.
Every irrelevance.
I spoke a lot already on this last one, but can I just share my experience with this one? So I'm doing dishes. I'm often listening to music or podcasts when I'm doing dishes. And I'm listening to this song and I'm just getting into it. It's just this beautiful, like, instrumental sounding song. I love the tremolo guitar. And I was just thinking, okay, this is probably, maybe there's no words on here. And I was really digging it and thinking, okay, I like this. I like this choice of an instrumental near the end of the album. And then all of a sudden Gord starts singing and just this beautiful melody. And then the snare comes in halfway through the verse. And I'm just like elevating. I'm just like my mood. And what I thought of later when I was thinking of how to explain this was the Vince McMahon meme. You know, the levels of Vince McMahon's like,
yes,
elation. And so I'm like,
which doesn't play so well now.
You know. Level one, yeah. You know, it's the instrumental. Level two, Vince is the singing. And then all of a sudden he hits me with catharsis. My arse is capable of more flush. And I'm like, oh, that's the line from the live album. And, you know, and then I'm just like loving this song. And all of a sudden there's the piano. And so I'm all of a sudden I'm fourth level Vince. And just when I think I can't love the song anymore, that trumpet comes in at the end and it is so tasty. Just the muted trumpet, tasteful, perfect. Like both the piano and the trumpet play just enough. They don't overplay. And I just love this song.
Who did the horns? It wasn't this from another Canadian band. Can't think of
his name, though. Is it Andy Mays?
I'd have to look it up.
I don't. That sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that's who he's talking about in Emperor Penguin as well, right? Like the first two lines?
Yeah, yeah.
Tone of your trumpet.
That was my other thought, yeah. I like the tone of your, yeah.
There's another line that I can't remember which live show it's in. It might even be from the Live Between Us album, but it's leading into Ahead by a Century. He talks about adolescence in essence is all about trust. Yeah. And that line pops up in here. I don't think slightly he mentions adolescence in song, this yeah. song, but.
Yeah. I'm looking at the credits. So does Andy Mays, is it?
That's who I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice job, JD.
And one thing, did you guys notice in the credits to this album, it's very specific. It mentions the type of guitar being played by each member, the type, you know, the types of drums and it very clearly says that Gord was playing on a gut string guitar, which is, you know, the old style string made of, you know, animal guts basically.
Yeah.
And it just gives a way different, you know, timbre.
I like the echo on the snare on this particular, it sounded like a stand up bass. I'm not sure if it was a stand up bass
distinct.
Or it was just the way the notes were played. But you know, I have a jazz reference obviously in my notes. So I agree, Craig, musically it was phenomenal. And then again, you're not quite sure, are we going to get a spoken word and then you get the beautiful voice and the beautiful song. Mm.
It's definitely one of the best ones on the record. I think I love the song.
I'm a big fan as well. I love when he leaves little breadcrumbs in a what seems to be like an improvised rant or a throwaway rant. Not that any of them are throwaway, but it turns out that it's been a line in his notebook for 5 years prior, and it's got six underlines under it. You know, like, God damn it, I'm going to use this line somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
When it presents,
I'm going to rhyme catharsis.
That's right. Yeah. I've had this great lyric. I'm gonna use it sometime.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's so cool. He's so talented. Let's just go right now to Insomniacs of the World, Good Night.
Thank you. calculate it from here. There's no need for breathlessness when we're so far apart. I can see us writhing in a phone booth or laid back in the dewy grass of our youth and gathering our sweetnesses and wishing on the Never Star. Happy days of electrical smiles, loving evenings falling down in piles, not imagining a restlessness that could keep us apart. Perchance I could dream and reconjure all of this vivid scene.
So the research that I saw, this was supposed to be the name of the album. Does that jive with what
that checks out. Saw? Yeah, that's what I heard.
And then, again, capping it off with, you know, more of a spoken word and just straight up, I can see the line of your brassiere. I can contemplate it from here. There's no need for breathlessness when we're so far apart.
I know one thing I noticed was what I picture here is there's a point where he starts recapping some lyrics from some other songs. I know he brings up the Fenway Park again. And what I think this is recordings of Gord in the middle of the night grabbing his tape recorder when he's got a melody going through his head and he's kind of singing, because it almost sounds like he trails off sometimes. He doesn't always have the full melody developed. And I think this might be his like audio journal, like little excerpts.
Wow.
Listen to it again. I swear. Huh? I'm very quite confident in this.
That's amazing.
And a perfect bookend as well to Star Painters. Just, bookends the album, the spoken word on both sides, the sort of, I don't know, I think it's an organ this time, not an accordion, but a similar sound. And oh, and Julie Dwaran is pocketed with, or is credited with playing the pocket trumpet. So just a just basically a tiny trumpet.
Shakespeare pops up in some of the hip works, and there's that If I Could Sleep, There's a Chance I Could Dream, which is from Hamlet.
He changed it a bit because it's perchance in Shakespeare, right? So it's interesting that he takes this line. Right.
Yes.
Arguably the most notable line that Shakespeare ever wrote, and changes it and keeps it the same, but just that little word change. Like, what does that mean? What is that all about? And more to the point, and it's the elephant in the room, is the version from Phantom Power. Where do you guys stand on those two versions? Can you enjoy them both? Can they both be your children? Or if I asked you to make a Sophie's Choice, which one would you choose as a preference?
I can't answer because I don't know the one from Phantom Power as well.
That's cheating, but okay.
But I do remember. It sure is. That means I just don't love one of my children, right? I do remember him screaming the line at live shows in some performances.
I had heard that reference and heard seen that reference before in Selmix.
Yeah, my preference is this one. I really like this version of it.
One thing that it really is so amazing about this song is it lulls you like you're ready to
until the crash
your head on the pillow.
I know the same thing.
Massive cymbal crash. Yes. Oh God, I love it. I love that so much. And fast forward to the final album that the Hip put out, Man Machine Poem, and there's the song Insomnia.
Insomnia.
Which was supposed to be Insomnia. Yep. And if you read the liner notes in that, it's Insomnia is scratched out in every line. And I don't know what that means, but
yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I think the whole record is interesting. What did you guys think overall as an experience with the record? And after you tell me that, what is your MVP track? And you have to pick one this time, Justin.
I'm going to go first. I'll make it easy because I think I've already referenced it and it's, you know, probably unlikely, but Star Painters was my, and again, it's the lyric. It's that line. Like anytime I hear that line, whether I'm walking the dog and I listen to it, or if I'm driving and I hear it, you know, the scaffolding, the scaffolding is in its place. The Star Painters are taking over now. And then your anesthesiologist tonight is washing up and on her way. So for me, it was that line. And I think it's because, again, like, you know, I wanted to separate, and I'm glad that I had the wherewithal to be able to go. I wasn't looking for, you know, Hip Light. I was looking for Gord Downie. And you didn't, me personally, and I think we even mentioned it with the book ending, with the spoken word, you were going to get Gord Downie. And you were gonna not just gonna get the energy that we know and from the Hip, but you know that he's gonna take all these amazing musicians that were part of obviously his musical background that created the Hip, and that he's gonna give them that opportunity for them to get together. And then just when you hear the story about how they recorded it and where they recorded it, and you know, meshing that together at the same time he's writing, you know, he's putting out the book along with it. So a little bit of criticisms on some of the recording maybe techniques, and could have used a few more mics here and there, and but that's just the, you know, I guess the musician in me. But overall, I can understand why it was what I would assume mostly fairly well received. And again, I know there's a lot of Hip fans that weren't even going to give it a chance, you know, and then the song that I chose as my MVP kind of pushed him away from the get go. So, so at least for me. So yeah, I'm glad I found the Hip, or maybe I should say the Hip found me, And I'm glad I didn't give up on him. And, you know, the energy and the feeling that Gord always gave me when I had the great chance to see the band and see him. And even I met him. I wore this shirt on purpose. This is the shirt that I was wearing when I met Gord backstage House of Blues Anaheim.
It's a Harley Davidson shirt with big letters HD, and the yes. HD are masked with a Canadian flag.
And this, I got this up in Vancouver on a trip when I went up there. I fancied myself I was going to be a Harley rider one of these days, and still don't have a bike. But went through that phase, and I wore this shirt because I felt like I needed to, because I'm, you know, go see the Hip. And this is the first thing he said. He just goes, "That's a really nice shirt, man." And he shook my hand, and there was just this gentleness about him. And, you know, I was starstruck, and I don't typically get that. I mean, I'm in a business where I meet people all the time, and I'm in LA and Hollywood and done all that, but this guy is different. And it was a moment where I definitely paused and couldn't put together a whole lot of words. I didn't know that I was necessarily going to meet him. I wore this, in honor of that moment, and taking this journey with you guys. So I am so excited, because I think this was a great start, and outside, I've heard a little bit of some Secret Path. I absolutely had not heard anything from any of the other albums outside of Coke Machine Glow, and again, a little bit from Secret Path. So I'm really jazzed, right? Cause I get to dig, you know, we get to dig deeper into, this individual that's just, wow, he's pretty special. And you could see, you know, the impact that he's had on so many. So I'm excited about this journey, and I'm picking that song, and I'm sticking to it.
Nice. Craig, how about you?
Well, being one of those Hip fans who took a bit of a break around this time, and not that I completely abandoned them, I think for me, I was just at an age where I was just exploring so much music. I was in school for music, so I was being bombarded by, you know, classical music and, you know, music from all through the ages. And on top of that, I was getting into a lot of more experimental music. And I just started drifting away from not just the Hip, but all the bands I had been listening to in the 90s. And, you know, a lot of those bands I did come back to, some I didn't, but I came back to the Hip big time in kind of the mid 2000s, or, you know, yeah, around 2006 probably. And so for me, this is an album I never gave a chance. I'd heard, you know, a couple songs here and there, Chancellor and Vancouver Divorce, I think, but I'd never listened to the whole thing. And wow, I'm so grateful for this opportunity to do this. It's just, I love this album. I put it up there with you know, some of those great Hip albums. And my MVP track is Every Irrelevance. I explained already. The Vince McMahon meme, that was me during this song. Just by the end, I was just, you know, spent.
Lying down with the smoke. Justin.
It's sentimental for me with it's Trick Rider, because my daughter is six, and I build bike ramps for her, you know, and then tell her, don't ride so fast off that bike ramp I just built you, you know, and don't ask me to explain. it drives it, you know, it really, yeah, I don't know. I love that song for different reasons. I also really love Canada Geese just because it's a sweet rock song. And I know I just like what I like. I grew up on Yes and listening to 22 minute opuses that were way beyond what a, you know, 13-year-old kid should be listening to. So I get weird stuff and I get out there stuff, but I also just love rock and roll. And, you know, that's a pretty good rock and roll song. I'm going to echo you guys that I'm super excited for this platform. Because as a kid in the States who had the secret about the Hip, you know, my last name is St. Louis. So everybody thought I was Canadian, and I was a Montreal Canadiens fan, so everybody, you know, they'd pick on me, and then I'd talk about the Tragically Hip, which was in the periphery. You know, nobody listened to it, but they'd at least heard of them. And they'd be like, oh, that's you're, who the hell is that? Why are you listening to that? That's stupid. Well, now I can finally celebrate it and talk about it, you know, and I'm Canadian for the next 8 weeks.
Oh, that's great, eh? Yeah. Well, this has been a great deal of fun this Saturday afternoon. You'll be listening to this on a Monday, of course. If you have anything you want to shout out to us, please send us an email. We would love to hear from you. The email is discoveringdowney@gmail.com. That's discoveringdowney@gmail.com. You can also find a link on our website, discoveringdowney.com, and there's a link to email us right from there, which makes it easy peasy. So it's been a blast doing this with you guys this week. I'm really looking forward to where we go and learning more. I am somebody who has listened to all the records, and I've listened to them on a number of occasions, but I have a very poor short-term memory, and it's tough to recall them sometimes. So it's been really fun going through this and listening the shit out of this record and then getting to talk about it with somebody. It's like a book club. So I had a lot of fun. And if you like what you heard, send us an email, discoveringdowney@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And on behalf of Kirk, Craig, and Justin, pick up your shit.
Thanks for listening to Discovering Downey. To find out more about the show and its host, visit discoveringdowney.com. You can email us at discoveringdowney@gmail.com. And hey, we're social. Check us out at Gord Downey Pod.
Dura. Podcasts and such.